in an unusual way, and we just really want to hear from some of you. And so we'd like to take some shares. Remember, all you have to do is press 5-star, and I'll see you on the internet, and I'll unmute your phone line. So that's how you raise your hand, is press 5-star. And here's what I'm hoping someone will share, a couple of you, is any of the insights that you've had as you've discussed the classic calls in your group or as you've listened to them. They were the language of freedom, scholarship ladders, and say Gobi-Doo are the ones that we've done up through October. So is there anyone who'd like to, or if you have a story about a student that you've seen growth since you've been teaching?
Can I start with the first share?
And yes. Everyone can go ahead and Elodie, thank you.
Who wants to share?
And by the way, I'm Sydney Earl.
Go ahead and press 5-star and raise your hand, but I just want to start with the first share because I am so grateful to my Key of Liberty teacher. You know, it was amazing, wonderful, beautiful experience for me when I, you know, I'm in the middle of getting my master's degree at Georgia College, and so I'm really swamped with all the kinds of reading that I have to do. And my son in the Key of Liberty class was memorizing the Ten Commandments for his non-secular award. And he said, Mom, can you help me with this really quickly? Because he had a question about something. And we ended up having an hour and a half discussion about our core book that would never have happened if our Key of Liberty teacher had not inspired him to memorize those Ten Commandments. And it was a great bonding experience for the two of us. I really hope that parents will take the advantage of the opportunities that the Scholar Projects give them to have conversation with their children. And the second thing is, my son has auditory processing disorder, so he has a very difficult time. He didn't learn how to read till just recently. And he didn't believe that he could read the Landing of the Pilgrims by himself. I read most of this Red Scarf Girl to him. But his teacher gave him a challenge, and I don't think that she knew his situation. She just gave a challenge to the class, and he just assumed he was part of that class, that they get their reading done early, and that she would give them a prize for getting it done early. And so he started working on the Landing of the Pilgrims, and he read the entire book by himself, and it was transformational to him. So
I just
want to thank all of you wonderful Key of Liberty teachers out there that are changing our lives. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Elodie. We have someone who's ready to share, but I have to tell you something beautiful. Isn't it? As you told the story about your son memorizing the Ten Commandments because his teacher challenged him to, I'll bet whole bunch of other moms who have kids in Key of Liberty right now had the same experience, because I did.
You did?
That's why my son wanted to teach it at family home evening, and he taught us this really cool way to memorize the Ten Commandments, and he used his fingers, and da 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 da. I'm like, thank you to Leslie who taught him.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
I love Key of Liberty teachers.
I know. It's amazing.
They're changing the world.
We have someone who wants to share their phone number ends in 3854. So, okay, you there?
Hi, this is Amy.
Hi, Amy.
Hello. Hey, I just wanted to share an experience from my husband's Key of Liberty class. He's not here right now. But they were doing a simulation yesterday that was similar to a lifeboat kind of a thing, but he was trying to inspire them to actually feel the dilemma or the struggle between what's more important, your country or your family. And so he had this whole simulation set up.
That's intense.
Yeah, yeah. So they had, it was like the whole country was going to be destroyed by this, he actually used Ender Shadow, so the whole country was going to be destroyed, and the buggers had one rogue ship that was going to come out, but they needed an extra ship to go out and kill the buggers, and only 12 people could get on the ship, and there were, I think, 18 students in his class. So they had to choose a leader and then choose who was going to go on the ship. But of course, because of the time travel, they would never be able to see their family again because of the time. Everybody they knew would be dead if they went on the ship. But yet they needed the people to go. And so they had this incredible experience. And the thing I wanted to share was one of the girls in the class who actually ended up being the leader. It was something that she shared at the end, at the debrief. She is one of those girls who is a natural leader, and Tiffany, you know her, but she loves children, and her email address talks about how many babies she wants to have because she just wants to be a mother. And when she was called to be the leader of this ship, it was very traumatic to her because she did not want to go. She wanted to stay and have a family. And she talked about how her mother was pregnant and was going to have a little baby boy, and she wanted to be there and to see her baby brother be raised and to raise her own family. And yet when the call came for her to be the leader of the ship, she said, I would do it, and I would do it in real life, and it would be worth it to save my friends and to save my world. And it was just incredible and so impacting on the entire class, and they all felt what it meant to make that decision, your family or your country.
Wow, that's so amazing, because I will tell you, I feel like that's what the choice that the pilgrims made, a lot of them made.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, having to leave everything.
I mean, that's a real choice. That was a real choice.
Well, and it's an interesting choice, because if you choose your country, you're choosing your family. But if you choose your family, you lose both in that particular setting. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right. Wow. Because if nobody defends a country, then there is no country for your family to be in.
That's right.
Wow.
It's amazing. Thank you, Amy, for sharing. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Is there anyone else who would like to share a story about your student or an insight that you've had on any of the calls that you've been listening to? Okay, then we'll go ahead and go on. All right. You know the topic for this year. We're talking about five trends that all of to teach our children, that our youth should know and that families should know. And we're talking about the power structure of freedom. This morning, Anelody and I would like to review the fifth trend and the power structure of freedom, and then the impact of the fifth trend. So let me go ahead and
You know, Tiffany, I really like the way that you've organized the information for me, because you made a graph. So you put the trends down on the left, on a left column, and then you put the power structure on the top, across the top. And it really helps me see, that graph really helps me see, visualize, oh, wow, this is interesting how this impacts the power structure freedom. So if any of you are interested in doing that.
Yeah, if you're not driving and if you've got a pen, and we always encourage you, if it's possible at all, to have a pen and paper ready when we're teaching. So if you do, then, and you'd like to make that graph, at the end of the year we'll email it all to you, but it can help you learn it right now. And this is how you do it. On the left-hand side, you'll list all five trends going down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So the part of the graph that we're going to fill in today is that fifth row with the fifth trend. And across the top, A, B, C, D, E, is where you're going to put the power structure of freedom. And we'll talk about those so you can fill these in. So the fifth trend, the bottom of the graph, on the left-hand corner, here's what it is. There's a trend that there's a lot of freedom-loving people who do not understand the power structure of freedom. And because they do not understand the power structure of freedom, they are being ineffective in their efforts to promote freedom. That's a growing trend. There's a lot of people who are freedom-loving people, but they're not having impact in freedom because they don't understand the power structure. So let's go ahead and review, and this is what you can put up at the top if you want.
Can I add that there are some people who understand the power structure of freedom who are actually having real impact to promote freedom because they
absolutely
understand.
I'm so glad you added that. Absolutely. Those who are freedom lovers who do understand the power structure of freedom, they are having impact. We just need more people, and that's why we're hoping in bringing this to light and just showing these patterns that we can help our families and our students and those that each of us have impact on to be able to understand the true power structure of freedom. Okay, let's go ahead and review those. The first level, the foundational level of freedom is self. There's a few ways to describe this. Part of it is to see life as it really is. It's education that brings us the truth about how life really is. And this is all about controlling ourself. Let me set this up by reading Mises to you. This is Mises on Human Action. I'm reading from page 16. He says,
Are you saying Mises?
Yeah, Mises.
M-I-S-E-S. Okay, Mises.
Yeah, I guess I should listen more. You know I'm visual and not auditory.
I know. Can you read it?
Even my daughter says, it's Mises. Okay. Man is not a being who cannot help yielding to the impulse that most urgently asks for satisfaction. Man is a being capable of subduing his instincts, emotions, and impulses. He can rationalize his behavior. He renounces the satisfaction of a burning impulse in order to satisfy other desires. He is not a puppet of his appetites. A man does not ravish every female that stirs his senses. He does not devour every piece of food that entices him. He does not knock down every fellow he would like to kill. He arranges his wishes and desires into a scale. He chooses. In short, he acts. What distinguishes man from beasts is precisely that he adjusts his behavior deliberatively. Man is the being that has inhibitions, that can master his impulses and desires, that has the power to suppress instinctive desires and impulses. So there's one more. While all other animals are unconditionally driven by the impulse to preserve their own life and by the impulse of proliferation, man has the power to master even these impulses. He can control both his sexual desires and his will to live. So,
can I add the other side of that? Benjamin Goodrich says, yet we know that man is imperfect and that we describe him as ignorant, weak, an ignorant, weak creature, somewhat lower than the angels, with a strong disposition to be corrupted by power. So on the other hand, on one hand, we have the ability to. On the other hand, we are imperfect and must train ourselves, must educate our mind to be able to
control
ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, so it's funny because oftentimes when someone is caring about freedom, they automatically skip to the fifth power structure, to the fifth level, when really freedom starts with ourselves. It starts with our agency to choose our response to stimuli and to choose how to control ourselves. I really love the story of Lucy Rann, and somebody who speaks French, please someday tell me how to say his name.
Lucy Rann is good enough for us.
Yeah. I just love the story because isn't he about 8 years old when he goes blind in Elodie?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And he lives in France, and, of course, by the time he's a teenager, it's during World War II and Hitler's taking over France. But as a child, at first, when he became blind, that's a big stimulus. One day you can see, the next day you can't see. That's a big change. Still, he was free to choose his response. he had a lot of freedom. And at first he was very angry. He blamed. He was upset. He was very afraid, very fearful. And as he felt all of these feelings of a disempowered state, and when he vibrated on those levels, and we ought to just list some of the things that are the lower vibrations. It's blame. Whenever we blame, whenever we complain, when we criticize, when we're afraid, when we're angry, or if we compete,
we're ashamed.
Yes, when we're ashamed, all of those feelings are a very low vibration where we're giving up our freedom, or we're using our freedom to not be empowered. We're not filled with power. When he felt that way, he would bump into everything. He didn't have any of his other gifts to use.
He said the world became angry when he became angry.
Yeah.
The world would bite at him and jump out at him.
That's right. It's like the tuning forks. If you've got two tuning forks on the same pitch and you vibrate one, the other one starts vibrating. So the world matched his vibration. But when when he began to choose and to exercise his moral agency over his state, and he was filled with love, when he was filled with forgiveness, when he was filled with gratitude, he had peace, and he began to be able to know instinctively where the chairs were in the room, where the bed was in the room. He could walk out in nature, and he could feel where the trees were, where the streams were, where the buildings were. He literally used his spiritual eyes.
Can I share an experience that I've had just recently with this, Tiffany?
Yes.
I have a son who has ADHD. I guess that's what they call it. I don't know, because I'm assuming that he has all those symptoms. But and he has a very difficult time not doing more than one thing at a time. I think that's ADHD. He likes to eat and do schoolwork and read a book at the same time or watch a movie at the same time and whatever. He's 9 years old, and when he has to concentrate on one thing, it's very, very difficult for him and frustrating. The other day, we were working together, and he was doing his math. And, of course, that's something you have to concentrate on. And he tends to get very whiny, very, I don't want to do this, I don't want to be here kind of attitude. And, he needs the skill, and it's something we do in our home, and it's a goal that he has. So it's my job as a parent to stand by him and help him develop the self-discipline to do that, right? But he's whining and complaining, and the first response that I want to have is to match his energy, right? We do that as parents. We want to match their energy, fight them with their own power, right?
Right.
I know that I have to resist that impulse to match his energy. And I have to create my own energy, and I have to create the right energy for him to be successful. So he sat there whining and complaining. You know, he's in this low vibration. And I made it an absolute effort to vibrate at the higher energy. And I stayed calm, and I smiled at him a lot, and I looked over at him, and I said, I know you can do this. I just know you can do this. You can do anything. You are powerful. I kept saying that to him. And it did take him an hour to calm down and really, really concentrate. But by the time he'd matched my energy of being calm and confident, boom, he had that thing done in 10 minutes.
Yeah, and it's so amazing. It's amazing. All of us as parents can notice if we can let a child bring us down. And I've had the same experience, Melody, with one of my children that can immediately bring me down, and I've caught it. And so now when it happens, I go in the room, literally, and I say to myself, okay, I'm not going to go to her state. I'm going to come out, and I'm going to love her. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to go to her state.
You're being absolutely aware of your choice to be in a different state. But you know what? It feels like those negative lower vibrations are stronger than the higher vibrations. It feels like that at first. Because you have to calm yourself. You have to get yourself in a place of peace. And Lucy Wren says the same thing. When he would go inside of himself and choose to love, choose to not be competitive, choose to not get angry and frustrated, then the world yielded to him. Objects moved out of his way, and he was blind. It's a real, true energy.
Wow. I'm going to read something that George Washington said that has everything to do with this. I'm reading on page 708 of The Real George Washington. He talks about, and these are tied together. These are completely tied together. He says, the consideration that human happiness and moral duty are inseparably connected will always continue to prompt me to promote the progress of the former by inculcating the practice of the latter. I think it's interesting that that it just is natural sometimes to forget that the first part of freedom is our ability to choose our own state. In fact, when
when we choose our own state, it builds our character. You know, it gives us courage. It gives us perspective. It gives us abilities to be patient and forgiving to other people because we know how difficult it is. It builds our own character. And that's when we really have impact with people, right?
Yep. And here's the red flags of when to remember to go to look at ourselves, to see how we're doing with ourselves first before we look anywhere else. And that's when we're fatigued, when there's tragedy, when there's stress, or when there's any adverse conditions.
Yeah, because the first thing we want to say is, oh, I don't feel good. I can't be nice, you know, or I don't, you know, I'm sad right now because, you know, I'm having a difficult time with dealing with a tragedy in my life. So I can't be nice. Those are the times we have to be nice.
Yep, those four things, as soon as any of those four things hit, fatigue, tragedy, stress, or adverse conditions, that's when we're choosing between an empowered state and freedom or blaming, complaining, criticizing, being fearful, angry, whatever. Okay, let's go to the number two.
You're asking us to do something very difficult, you know that.
And of myself, too. This is true freedom. This is where true freedom is. All right, the second level in the power structure of freedom is family.
So what you're saying is the foundational level of freedom is the control of self.
It is.
Control is the self-talk. That's the foundational level. That's what Viktor Frankl is talking about when he says, you can take away my liberty, but you can never take away my freedom.
Exactly. That's exactly what Viktor Frankl is talking about. And another way to put it, and TGYC is perfect for this. Any of you TGYC teachers can be teaching me because this is private virtue.
Okay.
The first level is private virtue. Itself.
And that's what we're trying to do in teaching in Shakespeare. We're trying to help them develop their character and develop their teamwork ability and
their self-responses.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Level two is family. It's so interesting that I just find it really interesting when I reread Red Scarf Girl, because it's my third child in Key Liberty right now, and how Mal got control of the education and media because he had to attack self. Everything a person saw or read was controlled by the government, and this attacked self because there was very little truth. And then on the second level of the power structure of freedom, he attacked family. He created a blacklist that made certain families be not part of the red guard and the red group, but they were the blacklist. Anybody who had owned property, any of the doctors, anybody who had progressed financially was on this blacklist, and it turned family against family, family member against family member, and broke trust between friends and work and community. He knew where to attack freedom. He knew how to control the country. He attacked self, and then he attacked family. And if we look at the opposite of that, of families who understand true freedom and how they live. My favorite three books are Laddie and Little Britches and Little House on the Prairie series for examples of families who understood freedom. How about you, Anelody? You go into a lot of homes. You travel into all of our communities. And what have you seen of families who understand freedom?
Well, what the one thing that I am point that I'd like to make here is that there are some great thinkers out there who understand the imperfections of humanity, and I think it's very interesting. One of the authors that I'm reading right now, this is what he says: the family seems to be the least imperfect agency for making educational decisions for their young. So he says, even though the family is imperfect, the state is more imperfect. And it's the perfect place for us to be training our young. And what I think is interesting is I have been, I do a 12-week parent mentor mentoring program. So I get people on a 12-week program, and they report in to me once a week. We have a little call once a week for 15 minutes where they report in and say how they're doing, and we talk about any things that they could improve. And the thing, this is the interesting trend that I've seen. First of all, usually those people who are involved in my mentoring program are really great people. They have worked really a lot on self, and they have pretty good families. They just want to get better. Those kind of people are the ones who are going to have the most success, because the others are resistant to change. People who aren't working on self don't really care about their families. They don't want to change themselves first. So I was working with this family, and I had some interesting experiences with them. They have a daughter who's married and who's older and had gone off to college and had some interesting challenges with her when she came home. And they started implementing family council meetings, and they started having parent mentor meetings. And they, at first, they had some real rebellion going on, because these children had been used to, you know, not having any governmental structure or problem-solving structure in their home. And now they have this governmental structure that they don't want to submit themselves to, which, don't you think, Tiffany, is a real human nature kind of reaction when government says, or when someone says, we want to implement government and we want you to submit to it. Don't you think our first reaction is, no, give me my freedom. I don't want to have any kind of controls over me, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like not wanting to have any bones in your body. You don't have any structure.
Exactly.
You know? I mean,
exactly.
It gives you freedom. Structure is amazing.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's the thing this family has finally come to realize over the last 10 weeks that I've been working with them, that the children, I mean, the parents were very willing, and they were going there, really, really putting in their best valiant effort. But the children are finally realizing, wow, this is really an awesome way to do things and solve problems.
And now they're starting to come to family council with problems to solve.
That's beautiful.
And they also have expected that when we come to family council, we're going to talk about working together and making each other's lives easier and better. And it seems like this family is just making amazing progress and this and really creating a beautiful family unit.
That is beautiful. I will spend other times also talking about what some of those things can look like to build on this level of family.
I'm so grateful
that you teach specifically to families. Yes.
This last summer I was working with a family, and the father did not attend my seminar. The mother had attended the seminar, which tends to be the case, right? But the mother went home and said, you know, I really feel like we need to do this 12-week program. So they got into my program, and the father was a little reluctant at first because this is what he kind of was thinking in the back of his head, you know. He says, I volunteered at my church in very high positions, and I've worked in the community with scouts and with young men, and I've worked, you know, I know this, that we have 7 children, and, you know, my youngest is 15. What am I going to learn better about parenting? You know, that's what's going on in the back of his mind. How am I going to improve my family? What am I going to be able to do? And over the 12 weeks that he was in the program with us, at the end of the 12 weeks, he said, I have to tell you something. I have learned that I have been stubborn and immovable. Because if I had implemented these things, he said, and I knew that I should have, these things were not new to me. He said, I just didn't think they were that important.
And yet they're the second level.
Yeah. And he said, what
that's
I realized
just it. They get skipped.
I was so unwilling to change my own self, my family suffered. And no matter how much church service I did, I was still hurting my family by not changing myself. And now I'm changing myself and my attitude about my family, and I'm stepping up to be a leader. And he said, I'm a better father than I've ever been. And he said,
that's
where
awesome.
Were you 20 years ago?
Okay. Number 3, the third level is helping others learn self. And this is really interesting. Here's what George Washington says about example. He says, I got to go to the right page, page 675 of the real George Washington. He says, example, whether it be good or bad, has a powerful influence. And the higher in rank the officer is who sets it, the more striking it is. So whether we think we're impacting others or we don't think we are. And we are either helping others learn self, and so we're promoting freedom, or we're helping others, and we're going to talk about this. In fact, we have to get through these next 3 quick so we can get on to this next one. Or we're helping them learn something different.
And
each of you are teaching the scholars. What's that?
What's interesting, Tiffany, is that, you know, when you change yourself and then you change your family, what happens is you become a beacon of light to those people outside who look on you and think, interesting, what's going on there? You know, recently I got a letter from a friend of mine who lives down the street. And she said to me, I am so grateful that I moved into your neighborhood. She said, I can't even begin to tell you how much you have influenced and changed my life. And she started listing all these things about what I had done for her. And I realized as I was reading the letter that I had done none of those things. I literally had done none of those things. My example of living those things had done it for her. And the thing that impacted her first was herself. She started looking at herself as she was seeing our family and the things that I do in my life. She started looking at, wow, I'm full of fear. I need to let go of that fear.
And as she started doing that, her whole life began to change.
Yeah. It's amazing. I'm so grateful for all of our teachers, all of you who are listening right now. I'm so grateful because you are in a key position. This one right here has everything to do with education, because George Trumbull is right. The great arcanum of education is mastering our passions without weakening the vigor of our mind, and that's what you're helping all of your students to do. Every scholar project is about helping our students reach their potential, and every one of you is very in a key position of helping others learn about themselves and to master themselves. And I'm so grateful.
And it's your example that's doing it. You know, when you can show that you can master your passions, and you can show that you have vigor of the mind, and you can show that you're forgiving and faithful, your students see that as a beacon of light.
The fourth level is when we serve when individual families are served by an individual, by a family, or by a community. And I just want to read one thing about this one. We've been rereading the Little House on the Prairie series, and it's been so enjoyable. So I'm going to read just a quote from the last book, West from Home. This is when Laura Ingalls was visiting her daughter Rose in San Francisco in 1915. And her daughter Rose wrote for the papers. She was a writer. And so she had been asked to interview Mr. Chrysler. He was over from Austria. And so Laura Ingalls is writing to Almanzo about this.
And the great violinist, right?
Yes, he's a master violinist. She says, I must tell you about Rose's interview with Fritz Chrysler, the Austrian violinist who served 4 weeks in the trenches, because this is right after World War I and during it, and came out wounded so that he is unfit for further service. He talks about the propaganda that was taking place in the newspapers, telling about all of the atrocities between the Russians and the Austrians, and he says, all of those are lies. He says, I need to tell you that the newspapers are lying. I found that so interesting. He said, there's no hatred for each other among the soldiers. All the stories of barbarities committed by the soldiers on one side of the wounded and of the other side are simply made up by the papers. And those higher up for the sake of inflaming popular passion and creating a hatred. Can you believe that? I mean, that
wow.
He said that both German and Russian, when gathering up the wounded from a battlefield, took them all, German and Russian, and treated them alike. And he gave some specific examples. But here's the part I want to read, because this is about serving families. Among the children they are supporting are three Russian families. Remember, he's Austrian. They were fighting the Russians. Mrs. Chrysler was a nurse with the Austrian army. He says she was so tender-hearted. Now, this is true freedom. That when a wounded soldier could not die in peace for worrying about his children, she would promise him that if Mr. Chrysler lived to come back, they would take care of them. When he came back, she had promised 43. Among them were the three...
43?
Yes. So they were supporting 43 soldiers' families. And that's why he was doing the benefit concert to send to the starving artists in Europe. And they had 43 orphans. And that is freedom. That right there, talk about impacting others. That is what true this isn't made up stuff. They were vibrating on that kind of a level.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I remember reading Dr. Suzuki's memoirs, and he talks about Fritz Chrysler and his great admiration for the man, and how he said that he knew that he had to be a great man inside because his music emanated it.
Yeah. Yeah. Laura Ingalls talks about going to one of his concerts, and she said, I mean, it's the only other time I've ever read words that are like Suzuki's when you are in that presence and what happens to you when you listen to music like that. Anyway, so that's the fourth. And then the fifth one, this is the one that people jump to and skip the first four. And that this is part of the power structure, and that's government form on any level. Let's go ahead and go to the chart now, to the graph, where we see people who love freedom who do not understand the power structure of freedom are being ineffective in their efforts to promote freedom. Let's look at what the results are. Structure.
Can I mention something very quickly here? We are not advocating that we do not try to make impact on that last level. That's where we want our impact to happen. In fact, that's where we want to be able to secure our liberties is at that level. But if we are not securing liberty, if we're not being free at the lower levels, we will not be able to get that last level.
No, because it comes through the first four.
Yes.
It comes. You have number five when you do the first four.
Exactly. And we are able to be free to become actively involved in making in changing policy and holding on to our liberties that way.
That's right. Okay, here we go. Here's the impact on self from those who love freedom but don't understand freedom. The impact on self is they're in a disempowered state, and decisions are based on emotions.
I just recently read an interesting article written by a well-known man who said that a lot of people make decisions, a lot of people who claim to be spiritually minded make decisions. And they say it's because, oh, the spirit inspired me to. But the deception is if the person isn't in a place of good character, that the spirit that they call spirit is very closely linked to their emotions. And sometimes, many times, all they're doing is making emotional decisions, and they could wreak havoc. We
yeah,
have to be
that's
very
so
careful. It's a very fine line.
That's very interesting.
When we're in a state of forgiving, and we're in a state of self-honesty, and we're in a state of empowerment, we can feel outside of ourselves the Spirit of God speaking to us. But when we're in a state of selfishness or self-deceit, or blame, or things like that, a lot of times what we're feeling is emotion.
Mises says that emotions disarrange valuations, and that inflamed with passion, man sees the goal as more desirable and the price he has to pay for it as less burdensome than he would in cool deliberation. In emotions, you think the means justify the end.
Yes.
So say you've got a child who's 4 years old and he's made a mess. And so you're emotional about it and angry. And so you shame the child and you force the child to pick up the mess. Meanwhile, he's shamed, he feels like he is nothing, blah, 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 blah. At least it got cleaned up. That's what's going on in an emotional person's mind. He made the mess, I made him clean it up, and so the means are valued less than the ends when you are emotional. I have an example here of the impact on self. It's on page 131 on Less From Home. Once again, Laura Ingalls is writing home to her husband. And she says, there is a house partway down the hill where we live, the materials for which were brought around the horn in the old days. The man who built it and his wife lived there until they were old, and then they quarreled. And the man deeded the wife half the house and lot. and had the house cut straight down through the middle, and moved his half over onto his half of the lot, and they lived there until they died. The house is up on the hill from the street.
It's insane to me. I just can't even imagine that.
I know.
Can you not control yourself?
Yeah. And it's, that's the impact on self. Let's move to the next one. The question is, what is the impact on family? If you have a person or two people or a people who love freedom but don't understand freedom, what is the impact on family? I want everybody to think. Just think for a minute. What is the impact on family?
So what you're saying is if we have someone in a home who doesn't understand the power structure of freedom, so they haven't started with their controlling their own state, what impact do they have on freedom in their home?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying?
That's right. And what it looks like is tyranny in the home.
Yeah, I think
that's
I was going to just say, I think it's tyranny because, I become a tyrannical tyrant when I'm not controlling my own. You know, I could be tyrannical with my son when I'm working with him and telling him, absolutely, you are going to do this. You have to do this for the success of your life, you know. And I could be a school teacher like that to him. And I, you know, I've known people who've been that way, and it works for them, you know, because their kids fear them. That's what that's how tyranny works, you know.
Yeah,
the kids
one
are afraid of them,
of the,
so they do it.
One of the ways is through fear. One of the ways is through shame. I have a nephew whose teacher recently. I've observed her on a few occasions. She is a most delightful person. She's somebody who I want to get to know, and I like her. I don't know her very well, but I've observed two personal cases where she shamed students. And one of them he told us about with him, he was totally wrong in throwing paper airplanes. If you're teaching sixth grade with 35 kids in your class, you don't want paper airplanes going around, right?
Right.
So it wasn't right for him to throw the paper airplanes.
Right.
But she's the adult. And that she has choice. Here's the stimulus. She's got students throwing paper airplanes. But she chose the tyranny to rule her class through tyranny. It made me really sad. So,
but don't you think that's what compulsory education is anyway? Because it's called compulsory. It's forced.
It can be. Absolutely.
That
it's compulsory education.
Yeah.
I agree with you. But even if you had been in that setting, you would not have shamed a student, Penelope. You would never have.
It's hard for me to say I wouldn't have because I feel like they're in a place of tyranny in the first place because compulsory education is that way. Now, I'm not against organized groups or public schools or anything like that. All I'm saying is that the method of compulsory education creates.
Right, where no child can be left behind.
Yes, it creates
something based on unnatural law.
Right, it's absolutely
right,
unnatural.
Right, you can't fail. It's not natural.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then maybe that's true because, like I said, she's a wonderful person. It's really confusing me why she would do something like shame him in front of the class and say, your grades are already low, you're already behind, and how can you do this, and you're never going to catch up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This
is only hurting you. I thought it was interesting you were telling me a story of how they were buying their grades.
I was in a home and I saw on the fridge, this is crazy. I don't know, maybe this is tyranny in the school. I'm just kidding, but they were. I have a friend whose daughter is buying her grades. And I thought, this is really interesting. They had all these box top, coupons on the box. And they had tons of them stacked up in a baggie on the fridge. And thought, that's weird. What are they doing with those? And then there was a flyer on the fridge that they could up their grade if they brought in box tops for the school because the school got money.
Oh, because school's got money. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. I'm like, I told my kids. I told them.
So school isn't about education. It's about getting enough money to keep functioning.
Well, I said it's so sad. That is so sad. And these are good people. They have no idea the message they're giving their child. And it's so sad. Education for itself is so valuable. It's so valuable.
Yeah.
Why are you going to eat sugar cereal to buy your grade? I'm sorry. Okay, here's the next one. So the impact on family is tyranny in the home. So then what is the impact on individuals? And Eleni, you're so nailed this one when we were talking about this. You've got people who claim to love freedom. What is the message they're giving other individuals? I went to the movie the other night, Eat, Pray, Love. It was all about freedom.
The message is
be free, indulge. Don't keep any commitments.
Although
it's the opposite
I do have to,
message to self.
Yeah. Although I do have to put my two cents in for. I believe that's how she started. Her whole journey started was that she was running away to be free, and because that's what her culture told her to do.
Yeah.
For those of you who are familiar with the story of Eat, Pray, Love, I haven't seen the movie. I just read the book. And she was married, had a family. This is the impact on the individual that the individual is going to have on the family. She was married to a wonderful man, apparently. They had a religious ceremony, and they'd been living together for several years. And he wanted to start a family, and she had promised that she wanted to have a family too, but she was so much into her career, she couldn't imagine giving up herself and what she was trying to accomplish to have a family. She became very, very depressed, just super, 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 super depressed, and decided that the best way for her to cure her depression was to leave her husband, and because he wasn't helping her at all. And she ended up doing that, and she went on a journey and
to find herself.
And what I think is interesting is I do believe that her journey was valid, that she was trying to find herself, that finding herself was part of what she needed to have.
Right.
I don't necessarily believe she needed to destroy her family to do that, but the message is, I have a friend in my community here who attended a seminar several years ago. I'm not going to tell you what seminar it was, but basically they told him that he needed to be in a place of choice, which is what freedom, right? And that he wasn't in a place of choice. And so he realized that, you know, he had some personal things that he had been fighting against and trying to work on to improve himself, and he realized that it was hopeless. He couldn't stop viewing pornography, that he had to, that was just part of who he was, and that the best thing for him to do is to leave his family and be in a place of choice so that he didn't have to feel
guilty. Be free to do pornography.
Mm-hmm. He didn't have to feel the guilt anymore.
Yeah. It's very interesting. This is a very interesting pattern that the impact on other individuals.
Be free.
Yeah, the impact on other individuals is to tell them indulge. It's about self. It's completely opposite of controlling self, but that it is about self. That's
right.
The impact.
They
about
were
indulging
trying to help
self.
Them be free. But that was their definition of freedom, which is the definition of freedom for many, many people in our world today. That's pop culture.
That's right.
That's what they think freedom is.
Well, after we saw the movie, I turned over to my husband in bed and I said, what do you think the impact of that movie is going to be on most people? He said, it'll give them the freedom to leave their commitments.
That's correct.
But
and I think it's interesting.
Very interesting words because it's not truly part of the power structure of freedom.
Yeah. It's going to help them be free to leave their commitments, yes. What I think is interesting is her second book is actually called Committed. And her struggle
with being okay with having to, she ends up having to marry her lover because he is from Brazil, and the only way that they can ever be together is that they have to get married. And it's her whole journey on how to learn to be
how
committed.
To commit and keep the commitment.
And the thing is, she struggles terribly with it. Even after this journey of finding herself, she can't come to terms with being committed.
Wow. Very interesting. Okay, so then the next question, what is the impact toward other families?
Yeah, it's absolutely the unraveling of the entire nation.
Yeah.
Because
what is the impact
families,
toward other families who don't understand true freedom?
People who are saying, be free, be free, be free, are ending up making families just like my friend, who's now divorced, who left his wife. He has 6 children, all of whom have, their second son is in prison, their first son got married and now is divorced, their daughter is an alcoholic. I mean, I could give you the whole, that's it, that's the impact it's having.
Yes, and the other impact that it has on people is pridefulness and judgment toward other families. The impact versus Chrysler, what did they do? They adopted 43 children. They were their brother's keeper. When you really understand freedom, you become your brother's keeper in the right way, not in the big brother way of Hitler and Stalin when they told on each other. That's very, very different. Telling on each other so the government can step in is very different than what the Chryslers did.
Yeah.
They adopted those children. So on the one hand, you have pride and judgment toward other families. You judge them. You tell on them versus stepping in and being your brother's keeper. Like the time my sister was 9 months pregnant, and a church member who had been invited into her home then got her kicked out of her home because it was a duplex in a non-zoned duplex. And she thought her property value would go down. And so 9 months pregnant, my sister's evicted from her home.
Because of a nice neighbor.
Because of a nice neighbor who judged and who didn't understand how much our freedoms are taken from us through zoning. Yeah, but she was a good woman who truly thought she was doing freedom.
John Locke would have huge problems with zoning laws, just to let you know, because he says that that's what freedom is the ability to be free and have your own life, and 2 is to own your own property and do with it what you see fit.
Right, to promote that life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the zoning laws are the unraveling of our freedoms. Absolutely. Because the property is not ours. We're told what we can do with it. I can have a guest speaker come on and show the whole history of zoning if we want to sometime. And the whole planning of why they implemented zoning and what it would do for the government if they did. So it's very interesting.
What I think is interesting is the next level that zoning has taken, which I think is all goes back to the whole the next level of people who love freedom who don't understand the power structure of freedom and what they do at the country level, especially
That's
in the
right.
zoning laws. You know, they're
and
they're
what they do is usurp.
Yep, they do.
Go ahead with what you're saying.
Well, they're claiming that we need to be more free. We need to make our communities more secure and safe. Right? That's what they're saying, right?
Right.
and that is free. When we're secure and safe, then we're free, right? So they usurp our natural law right, which is the right for life and property. They usurp that, and they say, now let us
create a little community that we can control through this through law, and they call them planned unit developments. And because we're going to keep you guys safe and secure in this beautiful little community.
And so the government knows what's best, and they get to choose what's done on the property. That goes back to number one. Our rights are derived from the government. That's the first trend, is the propaganda that our rights are derived from the government, therefore they can choose what's best to do on all the property. It's so interesting.
Yeah. So on that last level, because they make emotional decisions, because it's not based on truth, because they allow tyranny in the home, because they have fear and they rule with an iron rod or whatever it is that they're doing, and because they're having impact on other individuals by asking them to leave their commitments, and because they judge families, they're at the level of, okay, yeah, under the guise of freedom, we good people, we're going to usurp your natural rights, your inalienable rights. And we're going to now tell you what's going to make you free.
Yeah, do you have that quote from Locke?
Actually, let me find it.
It's amazing what he says.
On usurpation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if not, okay. We can read it next time.
I have it.
Okay.
I turn straight to it. He says, basically, I'm going to do a little bit of a summary of the things that he says on usurpation. He says, in a commonwealth, tyranny is had through usurpation. In all lawful governments, the designation of the person who is to bear the rule, so in other words, our representatives who have the rule, if they don't understand the inalienable right of the people, they tend to become corrupted with power if they're not themselves lovers of those inalienable rights, and then they become usurpers in the commonwealth. And let's see, here it says, and this kind of usurpation is a sort of tyranny that begins with an anarchy and ends with despotism.
Wow.
So when we run amok on the inside, you know, we're anarchical on the inside, then it ends on the other side of big government, I mean, a government-controlled entity where they usurp all of our inalienable rights. Because we ourselves can't control ourselves.
Well, it's so interesting because I have a friend who's a great lover of freedom. He's a freedom fighter. And I went to a town meeting with over maybe 50 or 60 people in it. I don't know if it was considered a town meeting, but they were going to form a group, and they had actions. They were following parliamentary procedure and all these things, and he was really heading it up, and he got really impatient in the proceedings, and he finally just said, forget the rules. We will just tell her she's going to be the secretary. You know? He didn't want to have to go through the time it took to have her voted in, to have her say yes or no. He knew her as a personal friend, and he knew she'd do it, and he wanted to forget procedure. And here,
you know what? That goes right back to the individual. You know, if they don't have the character to have, it's patience. He doesn't have the patience to go through the formality of what has to happen in order to keep order. It's called the rule of law.
Yeah, I came home from that, and I just said to my husband, you will not believe what I witnessed. The whole organization is built on purpose to protect our freedoms. I was like, he has no idea what he did. And that's why we bring this up. If we can teach our children to see these things, to understand the real structure of freedom, agency, and we're going to talk, we're going to have a guest next month, hopefully, and if we don't, then we'll go on to the next one if our guest needs to change what month she speaks. But we still have four trends to speak about this year and their impact on freedom. And so we're excited. Let's go ahead and open it up for questions. We have just a few minutes here. If someone has a question, I do have two people who had their hands raised. I don't know if it was to answer.
Go ahead and take them if they
were. I know one of them was from before, and maybe she wants to make a comment. But go ahead and be thinking if you have a question about this topic. Let's see.
Or a comment, because I know that there are lots of people with experience out there, and they can see this in their homes and in their own lives. We would love to hear what your insights are on this. Please share, because we learn from each other.
Yeah. Someone's number who ends in 2606, you may have, I'm going to unmute you. Hi, are you there?
This is Sherry.
Oh, good. Hi, Sherry. Okay, talk.
How are you guys?
Good.
I just want to share an insight. I don't have a question, but I want to share an insight that I just had. And it kind of started when Tiffany said, when you were talking about structure, and you said, about a skeleton, and that if a body doesn't have a structure, it, you know, if we're just a bunch of muscles, we can't walk around, no matter
yeah.
how strong the muscles are. And then, I'm sorry, just a minute. Excuse me. And then as you continue to talk, I wrote down at the top of my paper that structure equals power, and it's so antithetical from what, at least in my, you know, as I was growing up, what I was taught, because everything that went on in the late 60s and 70s was tear down the structure, because the structure isn't good. The structure is actually bad, and so it went from... There are some structures that aren't good, and I'm not saying that all structure is good, but it works.
Right, because what you're saying is there are some structures that are based on compulsory force, which is not good, right?
Right. But structure in and of itself is not evil. And what that era taught most of us, if we didn't have the right mentoring, was... Structure is evil.
Yeah, all structure is evil.
All structure
is evil. It stops
our
freedom.
Yeah. I mean, and you can see it in homeschooling. You can see it in religion. You can see it in families. You can see it in school. I mean, just, you know, regular, like charter schools when they try to start up. You can see it in different community organizations that you're involved in where they just, you know, want to be free, and they don't want to have a structure. Well, if you don't have structure, it's very difficult to function in any way, and you have to make sure that your structure is...
And it's not freedom, Sherry, because it becomes anarchy.
Yes.
And did you witness that anarchy growing up in the 60s and 70s, Sherry?
Well, yeah.
You witnessed any of it?
Cleveland, Ohio. You know, our slums were burning, and there are certain parts of the city that you wouldn't go into, whether it was day or night, because it just wasn't safe. And it was because, you know, people, there was anarchy in certain parts because it was difficult for even the, you know, the police to control what was going on, and it became very chaotic, you know. I think about
Don't you think it's interesting?
Pardon me?
Don't you think it's interesting how we've swung recently in recent years from hating structure to ultra structure to ultra control?
Yes, and it did, the pendulum has really swung the other way, where now that same side that was tearing down all the structure, all they want is structure.
Yeah.
But it's okay
true.
Because it's their structure, and they think it's the true structure, and so it's the structure that we should all listen to. So anyway, that was a huge, I mean, it's not, I don't think it's anything that's, it was earth-shaking for me because I finally saw something that I can apply in a whole bunch of different ways, that structure is power. You just have to be
it is
yeah.
power,
creating
and
a
and
structure
the structure will have different impact. If our bones were fused together and we had no joints, that would be a structure and we would have the power to lie there. You know what I mean?
In fact,
but if our
husband,
bones have joints,
yeah.
then think about all of what we can do. So we have to look at the structure and say, what is the result?
Yeah, Sherry, what were you just going to say about Frank?
My husband Frank has a disease. It's called DISH. I can't tell you what that stands for, but essentially what it means is his spine is fusing together. So the bone is growing over the cartilage. And for probably 8 years now, he hasn't been able to catch a pop fly because he can't bend his neck back to catch a pop fly. Now, if you all just kind of think about how far you have to bend your neck to see a pop ball, you know, a pop fly, like in baseball, I mean, that we're not talking about unbelievable flexibility here. It's not a whole lot. But he can't do it anymore because his spine is fused together, and there's nothing anybody can do for it. But the point is, because his spine is fusing together, it has completely limited certain activities that he'll never be able to do again. And so when you have structure that's being created in a false way, in the wrong way, it severely inhibits what we're able to do. And some of it may be unchangeable, or it's not that it's unchangeable, but it will wreak havoc for generations.
Wow. Well, Sherry, thank you.
It's a huge insight, Sherry, because it really, I have to tell you, government is force, right? That's what they say government is. And the more force we have, the more government we have, the more control we have, the less mobility we have and less freedom we have to do what we need to do.
And on the other hand, without any force, we're amoebas. Force itself is neutral.
Right.
Force
right.
is neutral. It's how that force is exerted that chooses whether or not it has a bad effect or a good effect. And
right.
freedom lovers often hate force.
It's not
good. The truth is, without force, there's no freedom either.
Right. Yeah, that's
without law, there is no peace. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, it does.
Okay.
You know, that's why I really like the new Commonwealth School, because that's exactly what it offers to people, is that the bones that you need to just stand.
That's
but
right.
But it's built on the foundation of the family. So it's
right.
the family and the individuals.
They have a ton of freedom.
Right.
Oh, it's so true. Okay, Sherry, thank you. We have two more people who raised their hand. One of them, the number ends in 6567. Hello?
Hi, this is Dion.
Hi, who is it? Hi.
Hi. I actually had a epiphany last time, and it totally applies to what we've been talking about today, but you know, you were talking about how Hitler had these keywords, gratitude, chastity, trustworthiness. And I thought, you know, my religious leaders say those same words. And, you know, it's not the words, it's what's behind the words. And so to figure out who is saying the truth, I wondered, how do you tell the difference? And my epiphany was two things, that the keys are that you have to have spiritual eyes, because I was reading this book, We Were Not Alone, about a family, in Germany during World War II, and they were not fooled by Hitler's words because they had spiritual eyes. And the other thing was that, to borrow a phrase from Red Scarf Girl, I am currently thoroughly remolding my ideology. But the key is that it's coming from within. It's not forced from the outside. And that's the number one foundation itself. So.
Right. You're so right, Dion, that when the inside is when the inside is pure and the inside knows and the inside is trying to communicate with the heavens, the inside you know that they're being deceptive. I mean, here's the question. You know, our current leadership in our country said, oh, we're going to have change. I'm bringing hope to the world, you know, those kinds of things. And the question is, you have to look at yourself and look inside yourself and say, I like those words, right? We like those words.
Yeah.
Is it coming from a character that I can trust?
Wow. Thank you. Let's go ahead and see. We've got a number that ends in 6577. And I'm, first of all, before I unlock this other line, thank you for sharing what you said about that more than one person can use the words and that we have to go a step further to know the impact of what they mean by those words. Okay, 6577.
Hi, this is Anne Agent.
Hello, Anne.
This is very deeply personal in so many ways because my father was so passionate about teaching freedom to others, and unfortunately, he was ineffective. He was ineffective in his home, and yet he was always out going about preaching, you know, the foundations of liberty and the Declaration and the Constitution. And I have felt that I've been following his example, going out, being out, doing a lot, and yet I see these patterns of the ineffectiveness that he had for himself, for our family, impact on outside, you know, individuals. We never served other families, and the whole process in our home was a tyranny. Family members.
Oh, my gosh. So you're telling us that you've experienced this on a personal level.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had been years very, very frustrated with, I see a vision of what I want for my family because I was very, very grounded. The dichotomy here, the discrepancies were so profound. I mean, we were rooted with a very good core, but the core was ineffectual. And
it was what?
Our core values that we had were there, but they were totally misapplied. Completely.
Okay. Because the individual who was espousing it was not applying it to the individual level. Is that what you're saying?
Not individual. He never understood our core values. He understood them on an intellectual level and not a spiritual one.
Right.
So the structure was malformed.
So was there tyranny in the home a little bit?
A lot. And all the family members fled from that tyranny. And he wondered, if I'm promoting freedom, why did my family fall apart and why do they want nothing to do with me?
Oh, my goodness, Anne.
And so here I am trying to establish these things in my family based on our core, and yet I see where all the problems are because I don't have a good pattern to follow.
Wow.
So it's created a lot of impact and challenge for me as a parent with my own children. I keep trying to rope them in.
Right.
Yeah. You know what?
Let me ask you a question, Anne. Anneli, do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
Go ahead.
Okay. Anne, is it helpful to have the true pattern of freedom laid out for you? Is that going to empower you and help you?
Oh, it certainly will. The challenge that I've had and I've recognized for a long time is how stubborn and challenging it has been for me to change. Knowing that you need to change and making the change is such a huge leap. It is so deeply rooted and emotional. It's very overwhelming because I know that as I change, that impact for my family will be remarkable.
Wow.
Getting me over the hump is the challenge.
Right.
You're exactly right, Anne. That was exactly what I was going to say, Tiffany. I'm glad you asked the question first, because the comment I was going to make is, now that you have this information, this Lavoisier, I love what he says, 90% of solving a problem is giving it a name. Now that you have a name, we're working on the power structure of freedom, and that starts with me. Now that you have that, every single time you look at we have a family problem, you can say first, okay, where am I in this problem? Am I controlling my state? Yeah.
And go ahead, Melody.
And let me tell you something, Anne. You're on the right track. You're exactly where you need to be. This is a journey, and it's a long journey, and you're going to make it.
I'm grateful for your humility in being real with all of us and everyone who's listening. And I'm so grateful for you being willing to be real with us, because when a person steps forward and they're willing to be real and vulnerable in this way, it gives everybody else permission to do the same, to be more real and more honest.
Can I share with you another personal story? Thank you so much, Anne, because I'm working with a woman right now who has had some frustration with tyranny in the home, and I have her on a personal mentoring program. And, you know, honestly, it's not the mentor who does the work, it's the student who does the work, and this student was absolutely ready to be open to the next level of her life. All I did is open up conversation and give her opportunities to read some things, and she has literally done this, Anne. She has literally changed from the inside out, and the tyranny in her home, or the frustrations that she has been facing with a spouse or whatever else that she's had, is beginning to dissolve because she's beginning to develop the spiritual eyes to see clearly.
Yeah. Okay. Anne, thank you. Everyone who shared with us today, thank you. And remember, tell your friends if they weren't able to get on the call this morning that by Monday it will be available on the website to have their pin ready. They can listen to it right on the website because you've all paid. There's no cost. But if they want to download it and have it on their iPod, it's 99 cents because that pays for the fees to be able to do that. But anyone who's on our conference call series, it will be there Monday to listen to for the next 2 weeks if any of your friends who are on the call weren't able to get on live with us. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much. I feel fed, and I feel like I've learned. And I'm going
Me too.
To go home.
Thank you, Anneli. All right, everyone, have a wonderful, wonderful October. Enjoy your group calls on Say Go Be Do, and we'll see you next month.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.